Welcome back yet again to the Ramble Room. This is another installment on our series on the platform of the Wyoming GOP. The original discussion went on for close to 2 hours, and so we've decided to break it up into segments. Each of these segments has a similar intro so that each show will stand as a standalone show. If you are following this series and don't want to hear the intro each time, just skip to about 2 minutes and 30 seconds. Another special edition. Again, we are joined by David Iverson of
Cowboy State Politics.
Also with us today is Todd Windsor. Todd is state committeeman for Sheridan County. Diane is here with us too. There's been a lot of talk of late about how the Republican Party has been taken over by extremists. What we want to do is take a good look at the platform and what it actually says. A lot of people will hear that there's complaining that these radicals have taken over, but they don't necessarily know what these radicals have said. So we want to quote from the platform.
Before we get there, Ken, just an important point. A lot of the people that are accusing us of being radicals were part of the discussion about the platform at the last Wyoming GOP convention. In fact, they were in the meeting. It's those same folks that are now claiming that the party's been taken over by radicals.
The current platform that the party's using dates back to 2012, to the state convention, of which a number of people who are now whining about it were part of and approved the platform.
One of the important parts of the party platform is the very beginning, where it says we believe that there are timeless truths. And everything that you see in the Republican Party platform are things that most people generally agree on. We say that they're timeless because they're true, and they've always been true.
Wyoming was one of the first states to take its platform and distill it down and condense it so it fit on one piece of paper front and back at the most. The National Republican Party actually took the Wyoming platform as an example and took their national platform, which was like 70 pages, and distilled it down to a similarly short piece of work. And that was all because of what we did here in Wyoming.
So what I propose is that I will read a few of these articles and let you two comment on them. Article number 4 deals with private property rights. Of course, we all know and we've stated several times that liberty begins with the idea of having private property. I point you back to Walter Williams, who is often quoted here, that private property rights begin with self-ownership. Enough preaching on that. The article says, the pursuit by an individual to rightfully acquire, keep, and enjoy his own property is foundational. Every individual has the right to develop his own potential, to use and enjoy his own property, tangible or intellectual, and pursue his own interests, free from the restrictions of arbitrary force. Individuals are always presumed to be the best stewards of their property.
There are multiple unwritten facets to this one. In Wyoming, we tend to think of property as land, but property involves so many other things. It's what you as a person own. And that can be intellectual property. That can be, you know, your art collection, your books. It could be any of that stuff. Those are yours. You acquired those. You worked to get those and keep those. So essentially what this is saying is that, you know, leave my stuff alone. The other part of this, which is kind of unspoken, is that last sentence, individuals are always presumed to be the best stewards of their property. Wyoming has, 57% government land or more?
Something like that.
Owned by the federal government. Now, some of that, like Yellowstone Park and such, probably should be owned by the federal government. And you get back to BLM lands and even some of the National Forest lands. Who's a better steward of those? The people who live in the state and use those lands and have to take care of those lands, or a bureaucrat 2,000 miles away in an office in Washington?
Who knows nothing about it.
Who knows nothing about it, and they apply the same standards to every piece of property across the country that they own. You know, they don't modify their standards for specific states or areas. They apply standards across the board.
So the Everglades has the same standards applied to it as the Bighorn National Forest?
In some degree, yes,
yeah.
They do.
Mm-hmm.
And, Trump was trying to move the BLM headquarters to Grand Junction from Washington, D.C. 90-some percent of the workers in D.C. didn't want to move.
Well, of course not.
Yeah. Now, I don't know, where would you rather live? I'd rather live in Grand Junction than D.C.
90% of the people in Grand Junction probably didn't want them there either.
There's a couple of things with private property, and I think we should look back to our founding documents, that originally it was not life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It was life, liberty, and property. You see, property is inextricably tied to your liberty. And one of the main reasons why we fought the revolution is that the King of England was infringing on the private property rights of the colonists. And again, if you cannot own personal property, you cannot have liberty. Okay, so now the reason why property was not left in there and it was changed to the pursuit of happiness is our founders were worried that the term property would apply to slaves, mm-hmm. and they wanted specifically to avoid that. So that's why it was changed to the pursuit of happiness. But when we look at property rights, we're essentially looking at liberty in and of itself, that if you cannot own something, you do not have personal liberty.
I would argue that property begins, as I stated at the beginning of this, with self-ownership.
Absolutely.
And therefore, property includes self-ownership, which makes slavery immoral, unjust, and wrong. Individuals are always presumed to be the best stewards of their property, unless, of course, their property is their own body and they're told, wear a mask. They're told at the same time, observe social distancing. Well, if one works, the other is not necessary. And I have yet to wear a mask anywhere at any time, and I will not. If that bothers you, move away.
Were you at the 2020 Republican Convention in Gillette?
No.
Okay.
I was.
So
otherwise occupied.
We had, what, 400 odd people there?
Yeah, give or
roughly.
Take.
Was... Nobody was wearing a mask, except a select few.
How many
scared.
Of you survived?
Nobody got COVID.
Yeah, one of my top fans was wearing a mask, but I...
Yeah, I mean, there were a few, and they basically went and hid in another room because they were scared of dying in front of everybody, I guess.
Well, and this one here, and I think it's a good point to bring up, is that the Medicaid expansion bill is going to come up again in the legislature.
It's coming up right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably going to end up being a committee bill. That's what Representative Jennings told us.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that directly relates to your stewardship of your personal body, that is, your property.
Absolutely.
And again, I mean, our friends, the Democrats, are very much interested in taking away your right to make an individual decision as to what's best for you and your family.
Because we're all stupid, you know.
Yeah, we are. Yeah. And extreme, too. Extremely stupid.
Extremely stupid, yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So the private property rights article has a second one, which is article number 5. And that says the Wyoming Republican Party supports the protection of private property from the use of eminent domain, civil asset forfeiture, amortization, or inverse condemnation.
So the civil asset forfeiture issue is completely tied into, it's like Medicaid expansion. It's all about the money. Nobody wants to give up that gravy drain. Of civil asset forfeiture. And I mean, it's a classic case of a law that has unintended consequences, which most laws do, which is, you know, it's like, okay, if you take away a drug dealer's resources, they can't continue to operate even though they're under arrest. They can't defend themselves. They can't, you know, they can't hire a lawyer because they don't have any money. And that was the whole idea behind it, was to basically keep these people from getting off the hook. Yet that civil asset forfeiture has been bastardized into so many other things. You know, if you are driving across I-80 and they pull you over and you've got $15,000 in cash in your trunk, gee, guess what's going to happen? Mm-hmm. They're going to take the cash and your car and find something to charge you with. And they're going to keep all that stuff. And you're out. Yet that is your property that... You worked.
And you were never afforded due process.
You're not afforded due process.
Which is exactly the same principle that's going into red flag laws.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Religious freedom, Article 6. The freedom to practice one's faith is a fundamental natural right secured by our Constitution. The First Amendment does not require the expulsion of religion from public life. We must keep in mind the Judeo-Christian principles of the founding fathers when they wrote it. The practice of faith under this tradition encourages good moral behavior and the development of character that helps secure the other fundamental bases of our national citizenship. Freedom of religion includes the right to abstain from actions contrary to one's religious beliefs.
So I love the atheist point of view that says that religion is ridiculous and made up and we don't need it because everybody will default to their basic goodness and act appropriately. This is from a group of people who live in what was once a Judeo-Christian country where most of the population was Christian or Jewish and believed in those basic tenets of morality, the Ten Commandments, for instance. So if you're raised with those, you have a basic belief system that tells you how to treat other people, how to act, how to live. So that makes life really easy for the people who don't have those beliefs because they benefit from living in a society where everybody else has those beliefs. So you tell me, are people going to act appropriately without a religious basis? And you can see right now, if you look at the anarchy going on in Boston or Detroit or Portland or Seattle or any other Democrat-run city, that should tell you what to expect without a basic religious basis for the population. They don't care.
You can't have the American style of a civil society without morality.
Correct.
And I mentioned in the last show or two, the difference between a liberal and a conservative is the worldview about the fallibility of man. The Judeo-Christian ethic is that man is basically inherently evil. Mm-hmm. And the liberal idea is that man is inherently good. Mm-hmm. And if man were inherently good, you could then trust them with government and it would not become tyrannical. But every government throughout history has become tyrannical. Absolute mm-hmm. power corrupts absolutely, which proves out what we're trying to say.
Taking it back to its root, though, if everybody were basically good, we wouldn't need government.
Absolutely.
Right.
And they, you know, the founders knew and stated that.
You mean the liberals are hypocrites?
I didn't say that.
I have a number of problems with this, as you might imagine. If we go back to what another extremist once said, George Washington, in his farewell address.
Oh, heavens.
He said, you cannot have a republic without an informed and profoundly religious populace. Mm-hmm. Religious freedom is at the core of why this country exists. And it was never our founders' intention to remove a belief in God from government. It was the reverse, to remove government from a belief in God. In fact, if you go look at the Capitol Rotunda in Washington, D.C., everywhere you look is a painting that is profoundly religious. There's either someone praying or they're reading a Bible or something religious in nature. And our friends, the Democrats, have made it their mission to try to remove any semblance of religion from public life. And they've gone so far as if you look at all of the healthcare mandates, how many churches were closed?
And all of them.
All of them.
Yep.
And there was no concession made to say that, well, you know, you're people of faith and we can't infringe on your right to practice your faith. But yet they did. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, your religious freedom is at the very core of who you are, what you believe. And then it goes to your freedom of thought. I mean, our friends, the Democrats, and these folks that call us extremists, that's what they want to control, is what you do, what you think, and how you practice your faith. And one more point about these folks that are calling us all extremists, let me just read to you one of the changes that they wanted to make to this particular passage. And instead of Judeo-Christian values, their version of it reads, and again, I'll omit the party who has this written on their website and is readily available, But it says, quote, "We believe that the founding of our country is based on Judeo-Christian and classical Greco-Roman values." Now, who is the extremist in this situation? Have you ever heard that term before?
Greco-Roman values? No.
No.
I thought it had to do with wrestling.
That's what I was going to say. I heard it in wrestling, yes.
Yeah.
But what that relates to is secular humanism.
Right.
That is a removal of God from the public square, which is their ultimate, as far as it relates to this article, that is their ultimate goal, is
or
to remove.
Polytheism.
Sure, or whatever.
So, David, the question I have is Adonis, is that Alec Baldwin or George Clooney?
I think it's probably Clooney.
Okay. Yeah.
Some of the information you give here is accurate.
Some.
Article 7 deals with family values. The Wyoming Republican Party believes that the definition of marriage is the union of one man and one woman. The traditional family, based on the foundation of marriage between one man and one woman, is the best institution and is the authority on how to provide children with the education and training to develop their potential and prepare them to participate in society and in our government.
Yes.
Absolutely, yes.
I was just reading some things about this. It was Dr. Vody Bachum. And one of the arguments is that Jesus never spoke about homosexuality, and Vody quite beautifully destroys that argument. But one of the things he's talking about is marriage comes from God. God defined it. Man doesn't have the right to redefine what God has already established and written. And it goes back to the religious freedom idea. Christians believe, the Judeo-Christian principles believe, that God's laws are higher than man's laws, and therefore they come first. And when man's laws begin to interfere with God's laws, our obedience must go to the higher power.
Well, there's a concerted effort on the part of the Democrats and these people who like to call us extremists to completely destroy family values in the state. Another one of the items on that particular website that shall go unnamed, to include transgenderism as education in public school. On that particular website, which is available at cowboystatepolitics.com, I'll make sure that it's in big, bold letters so you can read this whole thing. But it takes out the definition of marriage as a contract between one man and one woman and replaces it with a secular definition of a civic partnership. And it's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, it's the classic liberal ploy of changing the definition of words to suit our situation, which, if you read through that document, I mean, it's a complete list of relative morality, so that things are right given the context of our situation. And what the Republican Party platform does is it says these things are true all of the time. They're timeless, which means they're true at every point in time.
I just had a question about classical Greco-Roman principles, because that might sound like a way out for some of these people, but if you know anything about the classical Greco-Roman principles, they felt the same way about marriage that we do. They might have been doing some other things that Christians wouldn't approve of, but the men didn't marry each other. They didn't abort their babies. They just laid them out on the mountain to die or be rescued or something like
as
that.
As if that's so much better.
Right. But as far as marriage goes and the definition of marriage, it was the same. So I don't think that they're really giving themselves an out if they know anything about what they're talking, you know, what they're hoping to be saying.
I'm pretty libertarian at heart. There is a side of me that sees the argument for granting two committed individuals, same sex, or some sort of a civil union status. But don't call it marriage. But the other side of that is, where do we draw the line? Because eventually you come down to pedophilia.
Oh, that's their latest push.
Right.
Yeah. The big problem with all this is that at the time that you talk about the founding fathers, the time the Constitution, Declaration of Independence, all that was written during that period, the government was not involved in marriage. Marriage is a union between a man and a woman under God. The church was involved in marriage, but there was no such thing as a marriage license. And marriage, as is defined today, is a modern creation. Basically, it's to create a contract in the eyes of the government where these two people have the same rights with each other. In other words, I mean, you go to a hospital. I mean, one of the recent arguments for gay marriage was that, your partner would be in the hospital and they wouldn't let the other person in to see him because they weren't the family, you know. And you know, that was one of their arguments, is that we need marriage because then they will respect me and let me in there, you know, recognize me as the partner of this mm-hmm. person. It's the same thing when you die, when you start having estate taxes and all sorts of other legal ramifications to death. The spouse automatically gets certain things in certain states. So the government has gotten involved in marriage and they've created this issue. Rather than do what you're saying, Ken, which is the correct way to do it, is form some sort of civil union or some sort of contract between two parties, They have decided to take another swing at destroying religion or Christianity and define it as marriage. Marriage is what it is, and it's defined by the Bible, and That's what marriage
rather
is.
Rather than, let's say, for example, with income tax, and it's been the way it is for a long time, that a married couple, perhaps in the idea of social engineering, a married couple would get a tax break. And so you want that tax break. Well, don't change the definition of marriage. Change the law so that it reads that some sort of civil union might be able to do that. That might be a feasibility, but that's not really their goal.
Right.
Their goal is to destroy the Judeo-Christian ideals.
Oh, no, you're mistaken. According to them, and I quote...
That'd be a first.
I quote, the definition of marriage is, it applies to the benefits and liabilities extended to co-agents of a domestic partnership shall remain separated from that which is defined by religious doctrine. Now, does that sound extreme to you, Todd?
That sounds like the way it should be.
Well, yeah. See, but not according to the people that call us extreme.
How many co-agents can there be?
I don't know. It just says co-agents of a domestic partnership.
Yeah. Well, right now, I'm married to my dog. And I didn't ask for that. The dog did.
Does Jan know this?
I think Jan knows that.